Hare Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So we've just explained the okay. Let's go back. Rajanath, we have heard of the 64 qualities of Krishna from Gurudev. Is there anything more you would like to tell us on this subject? Right, because they heard before that that was what was there, that he has those qualifications. So they were hearing about it in the process, means the in an earlier aspect of the process, but now they're actually discussing bhava bhakti not just as a generic, but as specific, right? So when you discuss in specific, then you would want to get involved in the different personality aspects and everything like that, because you're going to be discussing rasa. Does this make sense? So the same subject comes up, but now you're discussing it from, okay, the bhava is, you know, is in that principle of what, from there, that it's the position between sadhana and between prema, and is the bud of prema. So you're defining what it is, right? So that's the sambandha, right? And then abhideya, then you're showing how that in the process of devotional service, when the process is progressing, that progression is actually the development of the bhava, right? That emotion or attachment to Krishna. So then it's the bhava that creates the shraddha, and it is what makes it go from one stage to the next. But when it matures, then it's called the stage of bhava. Does that make sense? You know? So just like, let's say, when someone starts to learn dance, right? Now, the first moves and all that they learn are the simplest of the actual dance moves. It's not that they teach them something else. But at that stage, you don't say that the child is dancing, right? They go to dance lessons, but they're not dancing. Does that make sense? But all the moves they're doing are the same moves as someone does in the mature stage. Does that make sense? So that means shraddha is just that preliminary aspect required in bhava. Then you do that in the association of devotees. You follow in their footsteps and do what they do. You're stable in that. You have a taste for that. You're attached to that, right? When all those principles are in place, then bhava can manifest fully. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Then what's bhava sadhana? Is that from the bhava that you reach?
Means within bhava, then it has its levels. Means bhava is that ecstatic aspect. But the point is it goes through five stages, right? So, in other words, the preliminaries of the first three are what you're doing in sadhana bhakti, right? It means the first one is shravana dasa, where you hear about who you are in relationship to Krishna. So you're hearing, I am servant of Krishna, right? And then getting adjusted with, I'm servant of Krishna, right? So varna das means I'm getting adjusted to that. I can function as a servant, right? So shravana das means I hear I'm servant. Varna das means I adjust with I'm servant, right? And smarana das means as I'm serving, I'm remembering Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? Because once past that, those means then you have to have already come to samadhi. So in other words, these basic three are starting down at Shraddha, because that's what the point is I'm hearing that I'm servant of Krishna, and I'm adjusting with that, right? So then I'm willing to act in that way. And then whatever little bit I remember Krishna, I remember. Does that make sense? So it's actually bhava that is powering the whole thing. Right? In that Upadeshamrita, Prabhupada's mentioning, quoting from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that these three are stages of bhava. So it's actually the bhava that's powering the whole thing. Right? Because the point is prema is the natural condition of the living entity. But that prema, that's already like manifest. It already has its nature. But that nature in a bud form means it hasn't fully manifest. That's bhava. So you're taking aspects of that bud. That's what sadhana bhakti. Does that make sense? Right? So then that comes through. Then that matures. Does that make sense? But it's not discussed so much on as that, because then the new, oh, I'm on bhava. No, you're not. No, bhava's when all the pieces are together. Just like, you know, the kid goes to school for one day, you know, and learns a couple of moves, right? You know? And then after that they go home and I'm a dancer, right? You know, that's the whole, no, but it's not exactly like that, right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when bhava is only in such preliminary stages, it's not so manifest. You know, just like you're sitting there, you've lit a match. Do you say, now that I have a nice fire, right? You're going to make a big bonfire out in the backyard, cook some potatoes, do the whole thing, right? But when you light a match, then you can say, yes, here it is. But it's fire, right? So it's just a small manifestation of the big one. But there we say it's a match. Right? And then when we light it, then, you know, it's starting, okay, like that. And then when it's actually, the fire is into the wood, then we say, now it's fire. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah?
So you say bhava is the foundation?
Its elements are what is powering the whole thing, just like electricity is powering the motor. You know, does that make sense? So it's
catalyst. I was looking for a word that kind of just like, it's not foundation. It's not catalyst. The energy behind it.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where it is. Hmm? Anyone knows where that is?
He's saying it's a caring principle.
Yeah, but he wants
a word.
Propellant.
It's more than just the propellant. It's just that it's bhava in that very minute stage. Just like we said, the dancing is, it's dancing, but it's not actually dancing. Because this, we just did Nama Bas, but that was, I think, before the Nama Bas. Okay, it says here, the nature of bhava is to increase the desire of the devotee for divine love gradually and constantly. Okay, these bhava symptoms are factually the nebulous shadow form of real spiritual emotions. Hence, they're designed as chaya, shadow, right, in the earlier stages. Because they're only a small amount of the shadow form of actual full bhava. The natural function of Bhava is to independently reveal the transcendental form, identity, and pastimes of Sri Krishna. Okay, Bhava constitutionally is the transcendental object of relishment bestowed upon the jiva and mercifully enables the souls imprisoned in the material world to relish the nectarine spiritual qualities of Krishna and his transcendental pastimes. Can't find the exact word you want. Does that give you an idea?
So when someone begins bhakti, takes it up, that means the shakti of bhava, you can't do it without that energy of bhava.
Yeah, well, bhava is what gives the taste, bhava is what reveals the name, form, qualities, and pastimes. But you don't call it the stage of bhava until it's once liberated. Therefore, all those preliminary stages are fully manifest because Shraddha has to be up to that level. The appreciation of Sadhu Sangha has to be to that level. The following their footsteps and practicing what they do has to be to that level. Right? That steadiness, that taste, that attachment has to be to that level. But it's actually what you're dealing with.
It's nourishing all the other stages.
Yeah, it's nourishing. It's nourishing, but the point is not only it's nourishing, they're not actually separate stages. They're just separate. We just call them separate stages in the development of bhava. Right? And then that bhava is actually just the bud of prema. So in other words, what you're dealing with is with the development of prema. But prema is prema. You actually have the love. So if you don't have that love, you're at that neutral state. Or lower, then you're dealing with rati, with bhava. So that's what's manifest all. That's what's growing all along. So when it's in its natural state, then that stage is called bhava or rati, because then you actually are manifesting the ecstatic symptoms of ecstasy. That growing love is there. It's a strong force. But before that, it's not necessarily such a strong or prominent force. It's why you're doing things, but it's not a conscious prominence all the time. Does that make sense? Yes.
Well, and here it says initially bhava generates ruchi in the heart of the devotee, later sati, the path to the Lord, and finally bhakti, but so it generates.
Yeah, generate. It generates. But yeah, that would work. But there's also another sentence where it mentions that it's the whole process. It's what causes the shraddha. And that would be a later than explanation of it. Because as it was discussed earlier, that the ruchi and asakti are like, you could say, preliminary manifestations of bhava. Right? That's where you actually start to really see the nature. It's not so much like a shadow anymore, or just a portion of a shadow like it is in the neophyte stage. But when it comes into, you become steady, and then from that steadiness, and you know, steadiness and pure devotion, then the taste comes, right? Because it's anartas that keep the taste from coming up, right? Because anarta means taste for something else, right? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, you're doing, they're having a, you know, cake tasting contest. Right, so after each cake, they have to rinse their mouth and everything, so that the next cake they can taste fully. Right, but if our taste is already there in something else, does that make sense? Then we're not going to be tasting the holy name. So it's when the situation is such that we're not distracted by anything else, and we're just focused on the name. At those times, then we see it develops very nicely. We get a taste. We find that kirtan was very nice. We remember that. Why? Because we were actually focused on the name. Other kirtans we may or not remember because we weren't actually focused on the name. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, then, that ruchi, it means, is a preliminary manifestation of actually that full form of bhava. Because you're actually getting that taste that's there. Right? Then that attachment comes. And then that naturally goes into bhava. Right? Does that make sense? But that's what's coming after. So the neutral point is nishta. Then before nishta, it's the elements of bhava. But the problem is that there's so much distraction by other things that you don't actually get that whole ecstatic element. Right? Something is there, because otherwise, why is there a taste? Why is there an understanding of Krishna's name, form, and pastimes? Why is there an attachment to the process? But it's not so prominent, we call it attachment. Right? Because anarthas are there, so other things are there. So when the anarthas go down, then it comes to that neutral stage, this nishtha. So then one's just performing pure devotion in a steady fashion. Right? There's minimal distraction. Right? So, but when that minimal distraction, even that goes down, because one's focused on the name, then one starts to get that taste. Right? So then it goes into another category. Right? So in other words, there's the negative, means functioning within the negative, though the positive, of course, is coming through. Just like, let's say we have this whole area like this. It was dark at night. If we put one candle, you'll still get some light way over there at the wall. But will you call it light? You know what I'm saying? But it's the same element of like now. Well, now we'll call it light. But that's some light. So in other words, you can only have Shraddha Sadhu Sangha because it's bhava. There's not something else you can make it out of. Shraddha is not made of something else. The Prabhupada defines prema as mature shraddha. That faith is complete. That it's only Krishna. There's nothing else. Bhava, it's like pretty much it's Krishna, but it hasn't grown to that intensity. You know, like, hey, you know this person? Yeah, I know them. They're kind of a good friend. But is that the same as someone who that they are their best friend? No. But it's fully, you know, positive, and you understand? So that's the difference, because it's a bud. A bud is a flower, but it's in its bud state. So you don't get the form, you don't get the smell. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't have that full manifestation of attributes of prema, but it still is prema in a bud form. And so aspects of that, the shadow of that, portions of a shadow of that bud is what starts Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya, Anartha, Nivritti. You know? Does that make sense? Then it becomes basically your positive, means it's a positive neutral rather than a negative neutral. Right? In other words, we're favorable towards Krishna and we're in the neutral state. Right? Means it goes the other way if you're in the neutral state and not favorable to Krishna. That's how you get here. Because you can't remain in the neutral state. You have to go one way or the other. Right? Tathasta can't stay in the middle. It's dependent. It has to either come under the internal or under the external. Does that make sense? Right? So that means that's that neutral state. So ruchi means now that power of the internal is really strong. It's there all along, but now it's like fully, you can see it. And then before that, there's so much influence of the external. That's why the neophyte aspect. Neophyte just means more aspect of the external potency. Right? Does that make sense? Nishta means now it's come to a balance where the spiritual is the prominent. But it's still, you know, a positive neutrality. Then ruchi is now it's dynamic. Right? So in other words, one's materially dynamic, one's spiritually dynamic. Does that make sense? Yes, so that's what's going on. So that's why you see the influences that are going on, so those are given specific attention. But you're dealing with the same same levels of progress, but you're seeing them from, you're seeing these nine levels of progress from, you know, Shraddha to Prema as the neophyte, the Madhyam, and the Uttama. Right? But you're also seeing it as the influence of Bhava, you know, the direct influence in Ruchi and Asakti, and then the shadow influence in below that. But it's mature as Prema. Does that make sense? Right. So it's all it is that you have the general categories and then there's details within that, but because you're taking different aspects and you group it this way or group it that way. So you have, so one needs to be able to be comfortable to accommodate all of them. So it's not just one definition. You know, it has a few definitions, but depending upon which aspect you're discussing, it comes up. Okay? So now we're getting into the aspect of bhava from when it's applied actually directly in rasa, in transcendental rasa. Right? So now it's being discussed again. So the 64 qualities were mentioned before. Right? Because Krishna has unlimited qualities, of them 64 are prominent. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's what you can appreciate. There's unlimited, but you can appreciate within that. Just like within sound means you can appreciate a quarter note. Right? Less than a quarter note, you don't actually tell the difference. So there is a difference. Right? So the 64 qualities are what the Shastra gives that are prominent that we can really appreciate. Then other aspects are subtleties within that or combinations of those or like that. I mean, seven notes, you can get unlimited music. So with 64 qualities, you can get unlimited, you know, qualities. Does that make sense? Yes.
And what's the foundation of the whole process? Isn't it Shraddha?
Isn't it Shraddha? Shraddha is the foundation, but as we said, Shraddha is that revelation of Bhava.
So it evolves?
Shraddha means what's the flame on the candle made from? What's the sun?
Sand.
Yeah. So all it is it's that manifestation, but when it's only in that size, you call it Shraddha. You understand? Because Shraddha means when you move to the next stage, when you move to Sadhu Sangha, that means the Shraddha, now it's like you have one part Shraddha, you call it Shraddha. When you have two parts Shraddha, and then one part Bhajana, Sadhu Sangha, you call it Sadhu Sangha. When you have three parts Shraddha, two parts Sadhu Sangha, you call it Bhajana Kriya. You understand? So you just keep adding. So you're calling it by the stage as whichever is the one that's just been added. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, I've cooked a sabji, right? Made a nice sabji, put it in a nice, you know, arrangement like that, and then I sprinkle on top of that some, let's say, finely cut dhanya patta, some dhanya leaves, right? Coriander leaves. Okay? Now, when somebody looks at it, what's the first thing they notice? The coriander. They notice the garnishing, right? They don't notice the pot. It means the sabji is not, you know, like that. So no one's looking at that aspect of the bhava. You're looking at what's newly been added. Does that make sense? So what's newly been added, then you call it sadhu sangha. That's the next newest thing is added is bhajana kriya, next one in artha nivriti net, like that. But the other ones are just getting bigger and bigger at the time. So Shraddha, at the point of nishta, you've already had five levels of increasement of Shraddha. So it's way greater than the first stage of Shraddha, but it's not called that. Because that amount of Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha and Bhajana Kriya makes one fixed in devotional service. So that's the quality that you notice, right? Because that's the working quality that you're functioning on. Does that make sense? So what we're saying is those are the stages of the manifestation of that potency of bhava, its influence on the living entity. Right? So when the taste for Krishna consciousness, the understanding of Krishna consciousness, as it increases, then it increases by each of those stages. So when bhava comes to that, it's like that. So now when you're liberated, so there is no more conditioning, that's the natural state of the living entity. So now it's just called bhava. Because that's the natural state of the living entity when he's liberated. That neutral state between prema and materialism. in a sense. So bhava is the natural state. So when that natural state is then being introduced into the conditioned state, then it has those stages. It means those stages that you're pulling out of the conditioned state and coming to the platform of bhava. Does that make sense? Because we're looking at bhava's way over there only because we're conditioned. But bhava is the natural state of the living entity. Right? That's why there is a concept of atmarama. Because just being in the neutral state, it's a nice state. It's a positive state. You know, positive means there's, you know, happiness in it because there's nothing material bothering you. Does that make sense? But it's not manifesting the natural full potential of the living entity. Right? And that's love for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
Would you say, give an analogy of a person who's sick. You say, so your natural state is health.
Mm-hmm.
Giving you the medicine, the first symptom you'll see, the pimples go away.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second stage, the aches go away.
Mm-hmm.
The third stage, you'll start to get your strength. And then you'll come to the stage of health.
Yes, that would be. But then being healthy, the healthy state, then you're going to do something in that healthy state. That would be then the positive. You know what I'm saying? So the state of healthiness is the neutral, but as a healthy person, you would do something. So that's prema. Right? So being engaged in one's natural activities, then that would be prema. Because that's what would be natural to do. So being healthy, that's just a generic neutral state. You're supposed to be healthy. So being sick is unnatural. So being in the material world, being conditioned, that's unnatural. So then, like you said, it's there. But then it's also important that if you use, in using in this analogy, is that that's why the acharyas use the aspect of sugar candy. Is that the sugar candy, because otherwise in a normal thing, you stop taking the medicine. And the medicine just tastes as bad when you first start it as when you finally don't have to take it anymore. But they give the example of rock candy, that when the liver, when you have jaundice, then when you take rock candy, it actually tastes bitter. And then as the heart, the liver becomes purified, right, then comes to the neutral state, where it doesn't taste bitter, but it doesn't taste sweet. And then it gets positive, you actually start getting a taste of the sweetness of it. Though it's very less. And then as you get healthier, you get more, and then you're attached to that taste, then it comes to its natural full taste. That makes sense? So that's why it comes. So then one will continue taking rock candy. So that's the difference. And using that as the example, then you see in the healthy state, you're going to use it. Now, what are you going to do? You're going to do something positive with it. Make things out of it. You know, you're not just taking it as a medicine. You know, like we're chanting Hare Krishna because we're supposed to. We chant our 16 rounds. It's a medicine. It's all the things like that. But when it gets to the natural state, then you make things out of it. You make sweets out of it, drinks out of it, use it in your cooking. It's just you use it everywhere like that. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the positive state. So in prema, that's just all. You're just absorbed in the holy name. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that work?
Yeah.
Okay. Rajanath, quite a few belligerent and also mutually contradictory qualities were mentioned. Right? Because Dhiro Dutta is envious, jealous, arrogant, deceitful, easily angered, restless, complacent, boastful, and ostentatious. Right? That was the fourth of it, the Sankarshan aspect. Right? So then... So he's saying there's quite a few belligerent and also mutually contradictory qualities, you know, that are there. How are all the, and that's in one of the personalities, and then you have all these four personalities. So how is all that in one person? Right? The general personality is contradictory to others, but even within the personality, sometimes it's contradictory. Goswami, Sri Krishna possesses absolute power and opulence, by his inconceivable potency. All these conflicting qualities and antipodes are perfectly harmonized in his character. There are sufficient references in the scriptures substantiating this point. The Kurma Puran states, conflicting qualities are wonderfully adjusted in the personality of the Supreme Lord. He is transcendental without a material form. Minutely small or atomic in size, yet he is also corporal and all-pervasive in every aspect. Right? So he's just in a very small place, atomic, but he's pervading the whole universe. Right? Although his body does not have a material complexion, the aura of his body is of a transcendental darkish hue, and the scriptures describe the edges of his eyes as reddish. He is endowed with absolute opulence, and therefore even contradictory characteristics may embellish his personality, right? Because the Achintya Shakti is one of his the primary Shakti. Is that, that's because the Achintya Shakti means the totality of his energy. So that means every quality, every, whatever quality is there, whatever form would be the medium to manifest it, whatever activity would be applied to those various forms to manifest that quality, all of those are going to be there. So they're all, the qualities are contradictory, so all these forms, everything is contradictory. So that means he's contradictory, and his Achintya Shakti is, because it's the Shakti to manifest all that. Does that make sense? So that's why sometimes the total energy is called Achintya Shakti, also Sarup Shakti, also Chit Shakti, right? Just depending upon which aspect you're looking at. That all this is contradictory, it's Achintya Shakti, right? All this is through this, is everything's being accomplished, then that is his Chit Shakti. If you're looking at it that it's non-different from him, it's his Sarup Shakti. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes.
Okay. But in his personality, they are not incriminating imperfections, right? All these different contrary characteristics. Though these characteristics are ostensibly opposing, in the personality of the Supreme Lord, they shine in divine excellence and are variously employed in his lila by the supreme independent will of the Lord. Right? He's able to use them all, because then they're in their perfect balance. Right? It means, you're talking about someone, yes, they're firm, but they're not overbearing. Right? You know, they're pleasant, but they're not too sentimental. You know? Does that make sense? So like this, you describe somebody that you appreciate. It's always going to be, you're giving the quality, but it's balanced with its opposite. You know what I'm saying? So you're showing it's just perfect. So that's the whole thing, the Supreme Lord being perfect. Therefore, all of his qualities are perfectly manifest because the balance is perfect. So if you adjust the balance a little this way or that way, it takes on these different flavors. Right? You bring out that softness and that more in the way of personal interaction on the intimate level, then it's Dira Prashanta. I mean, yeah, Dira Lalita. Right? Where he's submissive to his girlfriends, right? Or to his wives, right? But if you bring it back just a little bit where that same consideration is there and everything, then, but he's considerate, he's getting things done, he's interactive, but it doesn't have that same intimacy, it has that bit of formality. But it's dynamic, it's effective, then it's Dhirodatta. Right, so it's like Ramachandra. Right, then if you take it a little bit more, that idealistic, it's just so wonderful and so nice, then it turns into Dira Prashanta. Right, does that make sense? Now, if someone's not appreciating these three, and there's an opposition to that, then he takes that quality, then they overbalance from Dhirodatta. To derode Datta, right? So now he's aggressive, he's jealous, he's going to, you know, correct things, right? But we see Ramachandra, he establishes Dharma and everything, but he does it within that very pleasant, nice environment. But when it gets to the point of the demons, then it goes over to this other edge, because they're not respecting that platform. So it reciprocates with that. Understand? So therefore, all these unlimited qualities are manifest. So as it moves, then other qualities become more prominent. As it moves the other way, other ones become. But still, it's perfectly balanced. So it's a consistent personality. Right? Does that make sense? So how each one of them is balanced, but at the same time, as it's the balance on what's the situation he's dealing with. Does that make sense? Okay, in the Mahavaraha Purana, right, so therefore it says, though these characteristics are ostensibly opposing, in the personality of the Supreme Lord they shine in divine excellence and are variously employed in this lila by the supreme independent will of the Lord. So they bring out wonderfulness in the pastimes. Right? So it never gets boring. You're dealing with unlimited qualities that are contradictory, that are perfectly balanced. But each situation, because it's different from the last one, it brings out a different slight combination of those. So that means unlimitedly that can go on. Right? And because he has that, that means it's manifest. You're able to see that, appreciate that, that particular quality. That means it's manifest through his internal potency. So that means she has that unlimited aspect also. That perfectly complements his mood. Does this make sense? Yes.
Being tathagata, to what degree we can have those moods?
But is the important thing to have the mood or to be able to appreciate the mood?
No, what I meant to say is being in the pastimes, you have to be in tune.
Yes,
the
yes.
General thing.
So, but it's not your mood. You just have to be in tune with the mood. It's just like this. Now, Krishna has the mood of Dhira Lalita, okay? And so he's submissive to the girlfriends. Do the girlfriends have to manifest submission to him?
No.
He's very pleasant, very nice. So the more pleasant and nice he is, let's see, what is it? Okay, dear Odetta, dear Lalita. Funny, witty, expert in joking, ever full of youthfulness, a relisher of rasa, very submissive to his lovers, extremely confident of his self. Okay, he's funny. What do the gopis think of his jokes? They're stupid, right? He's witty. He's, again, more stupid, right? Expert in joking. Like that, it's getting to be in a bit of an annoyance, right? Ever full of youthfulness. Well, that's attractive, but, you know, get over yourself. A relisher of rasa. Yeah, you can go do that somewhere else. Very submissive to his lovers, you know, so that's why we're telling you to, you know, get out of here. And extremely confident in himself, you know, yay, he's self-centered. Right? But if he's not manifesting that, can the gopis manifest those qualities? Right? If the person is completely not confident in themselves, just falling apart, can you be arrogant? No. Right? If he's being boring, can you get upset that he, you know what I'm saying? Yes. So that's the thing, is it's not that it's the same, it's what's complementary. So the living entity simply is he has those qualities. Then the internal potency is manifesting those forms that bring out those qualities. We simply have to assist the internal potency. You understand? So that means being Shakti, we can fully relate to the Sarup Shakti, because we're actually manifest from the Sarup Shakti. We're an expansion of the Sarup Shakti. You understand? So cause and effect. So therefore, we have the capacity to deal with the cause. Right? And because Krishna is the cause of the internal potency, therefore the internal potency can deal with its cause. You understand? But it's a big step between us and Krishna, because we're limited. He's unlimited, but the Sarup Shakti is unlimited. So therefore we can connect with the Sarup Shakti. You understand? So in the appropriate mood to be involved in the pastime, that we can have. But to the degree that they have it, we won't have. But because we're assisting in it, we can appreciate it, how they're appreciating, even more. You know what I'm saying? That's where it starts. That's the achintya, inconceivable aspect of it. Right? So in other words, by logic and intelligence, you can't appreciate, you can't grasp unlimited. But by submission and service, by that blessing of the Lord in this internal potency, you can experience unlimited. Right? Just like something is very nice, you like that situation, you want that to go on forever, you can feel forever. But can you express it? All you can say is, you know, I wish this would last forever, but does that actually express what's going on in that foreverness? So that's the point. Logic cannot grasp unlimited. So this idea that you can experience it, but you can't deal with it by logic. So that's why the intellectuals, then they fail, because they think, no, my intellect is that big. No, it's not. Because then you're working with something. It's only how big is this capacity? That's how much you can gain. Okay? But if I have, let's say I have a wire, and I put, you know, 10 volts through it. Right? It has 10 volts, but if I put 1 million volts through it, it has 1 million. But is the wire generating that electricity? No, that's the point. It doesn't have the capacity to understand it, but it has the capacity to experience it. So Jiva can experience that unlimited happiness of transcendental rasa, but it can't by logic grasp it. That's why we're explaining what it is. But this is only the explanation. Just because one understands it doesn't mean one has it. Like let's say, you know, the child asks, okay, what's $1 million? And I can sit down and show him on a piece of paper how many zeros it is and say, oh, now I understand. Does that mean he has $1 million? No. So understanding is one thing, experiencing is another. So that's why the knowledge is not what's going to get you the taste. It's applying that knowledge in devotional service that will get you the taste. Right? I know that's what it is. So if I know what $1 million is and I follow the process to make that $1 million, then I can make it. But if I don't know what $1 million is, I may make $10 and be satisfied. You understand? So you have to know what it is, but it's not the knowledge of it that gets you it. It's the application in the devotional process that gets you it. So bhakti comes from bhakti, not from knowledge. Knowledge is a side. Knowledge and detachment are side benefits that come from bhakti. But they're not the cause of bhakti. Does that make sense? Bhakti is independent. Does that make sense? So this all makes sense, but at the same time, it's kind of like something new. Because we're so used to karma and jnana that we are unable to actually appreciate its natural original form of the chit potency, which is the natural knowledge of the soul applied in devotion. Right? The application of devotion, that's the karma, that knowledge is the jnana. But it's been perverted. That it's all about us, how I can control and enjoy. So we're not used to it in its natural form. So it's like, wow, this is something new. No, it is. It's the same thing you've always been dealing with. All it is it's not dealing with us, it's dealing with Krishna. You understand? So what does it bring us to? When we discuss these things, what platform are we dealing on? Right, we come to that neutral state, right? Because then we understand it's not on the material. So that's why everyone's sitting here in this kind of like, haze, you know, yeah, like that. Because that's the neutral state. Wow. Okay. Cool. Right. You know. But we don't have that prema that drives it the other way. So it's just we have that understanding of it. We can taste it. We can touch it. Right? But when we get down into something practical, okay, you know, when I walk into my house and this happens and that, and then we can get into it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that we get becoming aware of actually what's there. So it's very interesting when you discuss this and everyone's interactive and then suddenly goes into this kind of like, what do you call it? Like suspended animation. You know, conscious. You know, it's like getting in that, what do you call it? That... they make it out of, I think, turtle shell, like that. The Chinese use it. And that if you take that, all the symptoms are there as if they're dead. They don't breathe, they don't everything, but they're fully conscious, like that. You know, so it's kind of like that. Everyone goes to that place and just You know, it's kind of, you understand? It's kind of like a little bit. So, yeah. Okay. But that's what's nice about this is that, because the prema, okay, that's dynamic and active, that we're looking at that, but this is actually this is the tatastha position. But that's why it's not the dynamic. The dynamic is then that's engaged in Krishna's service. Then it moves towards prema. So it either has to be dynamic that it's used in the opposite, into the material, or into prema. But otherwise, that neutral state, that when you get to that neutral state, that's the state of Brahman. That's why they say it's nice. But prema is, you know, unlimitedly millions and millions of times greater than that. So then it's, we are not satisfied to just stop here, but to continue beyond. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah, otherwise one would mistake and think, wow, this is great. This is spiritual. Yeah, it is, but it's not devotional. It's the platform of spiritual, but devotional means that you function. In other words, it's not a goal, it's just the state of existence that you apply devotion in. Instead of applying it mixed with the material, we're applying it mixed, applying it within the spiritual. Does that make sense? Now we're really getting too weird. Okay, yes.
So Maharaj, is the 12 stages necessary for every living entity
It's not the necessary. It's just like if you want to get from one room to the other, you go through the door. But it's not that you stand in the doorway and, you know, I'm in the doorway, you know, check it out, you know, like that. You know, it's just something that goes through. So all we're doing is pointing it out. We're just saying this is a doorway. That's all. Does that make sense? Just so that one has a reference. Because otherwise, why does it mention that the stage of Brahmananda is like, you know, like an ocean compared to a drop of the material world. But then that ocean is like a fraction of a portion of a drop compared to the unlimited shoreless ocean of bhakti. Because the point is we're trying to get one out of the material consciousness, but we don't want them to stop there. We want them to get into the devotional consciousness. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say the person has left, you know, the one country where he's having a problem. Then he's in the neutral zone, right? So he may say, wow, this is great, you know, there's no guards, there's no nothing at all, but can he stay there? No, you tell him to keep moving, right? So he doesn't really focus on that mutual, that state. You know, he's tried to relish within the, you know, the material, but it's been a problem. So you're saying you can't relish there. So he gets out and you can see, yes, I understand, but you only are going to actually relish when you're in the spiritual. Because appreciation of the Brahman platform is not actually relishing. That's just existing. That's the natural state of existence of the jiva, is that of ananda. But that's just a neutral ananda. One has to apply it in bhakti, that makes it a dynamic ananda. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. How did we get back there? Oh. In the Mahavaraha Purana, we read, all the varied expansions of the personality of Godhead are transcendental and eternal, and all of them repeatedly descend to all the different universes of the material creation. Their bodies, composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, are everlasting. There is no chance of their decaying, for they are not creations of the material world, right? Because the material world decays. These forms are concentrated spiritual essence, always complete with all spiritual qualities and devoid of material contamination. The Vishnu Tantra states, the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the eternal embodiment of the Absolute Truth and is, in every aspect, full of knowledge, bliss, opulence, and unlimited potency, and is completely free from all 18 mahadoshas, great faults. The Vishnu Yamala Tantra describes the 18 Mahadoshas, right? Because that was there. So what are the 18 Mahadoshas? Fortunately, the Acharya has put them here. The following 18 characteristics have been defined as Mahadoshas, great faults: illusion, lethargy, tendency to err, rough, uncouth, dullard behavior. Right. All is one thing. Rough, uncouth, dullard behavior. Material lust, restlessness, pride, envy, hateful violence, lamentation, laziness, and looking for comfort. Dishonesty, anger, hankering, fearfulness, bewilderment, severe imbalance, and complete dependence on others. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, laziness and looking for comfort go together. I just wanted to check if they were two separate ones or they go together. Right, the lazy one is looking for comfort. That's why he's lazy. He's just looking for comfort. That's what defines laziness. You know, the couch is comfortable, right? You know, so he doesn't want to get up from the couch because then it's uncomfortable, right? It's very interesting in Shastra, like, you know, or that rough, uncouth, dullard behavior. Because we'll be rough and think, no, I'm being practical, but it's actually duller because you're insensitive to the actual situation that's going on. Right? The roughness, you know, comes manifest as uncouth. Right? Does that make sense? Because we'll always have some way of doing it. We'll say it's rough or it's uncouth or, you know, like that. But no, it all goes together. In all manifestations of the Supreme Lord, the 18 Mahadoshas are absent. All the positive qualities are perfectly and supremely manifest in every avatar of the Supreme Lord, and they are absolutely reposed in Avatari, Sri Krishna, the source of all incarnations. So here's all the positive qualities, because remember, the negative are simply lack of positive. That's all. So the actual positive qualities, those are what's manifest in the Lord. It's original state. Right? So then that means lust is a positive quality if it's directed at the Lord. If it's directed at material energy for our own enjoyment, then it's negative. You understand? So it's a lack of being applied in its positive form. Right? Or you may have like lightness and darkness. Right? So then it appears to be a different quality. You know, so it's either if it is there in the original pastimes, then it's whether it's applied connected to the Lord or not connected to the Lord. Or something that's connected to the Lord is the actual quality, and then not connected to the Lord manifests that, what we would call the negative quality. Does that make sense? So in either way. Besides these characteristics, Sri Krishna possesses 8 additional ones, asserting his virility and manliness as the supreme enjoyer. Shobha, decorated with beauty and grace. So which is slightly different than rough, uncouth, and dullard. Okay. Vilas, fondness for enjoying. Madhurya, pleasing. Oh, pleasing, elegant sweetness. Right, so it goes together. Like little kids, it's just sweet. It doesn't have the elegance. Like when he's small, then it's pleasing sweetness, but it doesn't have the elegant. As he matures, then it's more manifest. Mangalya, auspicious dependability. Right? So it means one is dependent upon him, but it's auspicious, because it mentioned before one of the 18 doshas that being fully dependent upon others is a fault in the material world. Being independent is considered the proper quality. Right, so then, but here is auspicious dependability. It means you can depend upon him. It's always auspicious. One will never be taken advantage of. It's not a weak position. It's actually the strong position. Starya, patient and steadfast. Teja, so that's to be steadfast, to be steady, one has to be patient. If someone wants, how come I'm not steady in my service? One's not patient. Teja, power and influence. Right? So if the power can't be applied, then it's not teja. Right? Does that make sense? So teja means you have power and you have influence. You can apply that. Right? So that's the, how do you say it? Teja, I think that's the element of Aniruddha. right? Teja and Shakti, right? He has that power, but he's able to actually apply it. Right? Lalita, playfulness and a charming dresser. Right, so Lalita, both the playfulness, be able, to, but also to be able to dress the part. Right, the one who can dress nice, then he does like that. And audarya, magnanimity. The quality of shobha also includes being merciful to one's subordinates. Right, shobha was supreme in joy. Okay, shobha, decorated with beauty and grace, also means being merciful to one's subordinates. Boldness in dealing with one's equals. Heroism and valor, enthusiasm, straightforwardness, and truthfulness. This is how you understand rasik. Rasik can tell you what is there in rasa and what are the breakdowns even within these. Right? So this is the position. When a person is seen to be always happy and is accustomed to speak smilingly, he is considered to be in the mode of vilas. That's the second quality, fondness for enjoying. Custom to speak smilingly is considered to be, who is seen always happy, so vilas is fondness for enjoying. But that means he's always happy. The person who's always grumpy and is trying to be happy, that's not vilas. Right? Making, he's got the money, he's got the influence, he's making the arrangements. Right? No, but vilas, he's always happy and accustomed to speak smilingly. He'll always be able to enjoy. Right, that's a unique person. You have the person who's trying to make arrangements and enjoy, but you don't think. But then there's the guy, you know, in the group. You don't bump into him very often. At least I haven't. Means you have the guy. He's always smiling. He's always happy. Right? He's always around and trying to interact very nicely. But he's also the one that really knows, you know, when something comes up, how to enjoy. He can really take advantage of the situation. Actually, I've only met one in 69 in Israel. He wasn't from Israel, so America. Doesn't mean there aren't any in Israel. I don't know. Okay, you haven't seen, so this guy said no. But I've seen one more, but I didn't interact. They walk in a very specific way, like that. Okay. So measured gait, calm demeanor, amiable and sweet speech, and desirability come under the purview of madhurya. Madhurya was pleasing, elegant sweetness. So then that measured gait, calm demeanor, amiability and sweet speech, right? Because Krishna will have all these at once, you know, so they'll all be perfectly blended. That's why it's so unique. And desirability, right? So here is, what is that? Madhurya, pleasing, sweet, so yeah. Being the emblem of trustworthiness, dependability for the entire universe makes Krishna all auspicious, mangalya. Krishna never wavers or falters from performing his work and duty, so he is patient, fixed, and steadfast, starya. Patient and steadfast. But here it also is that wavers or falters from performing his duty. Right, so he never wavers from that, so he is patient, fixed, and steadfast. That makes sense? So one who always performs his duty, then it will. The ability to attract everyone with power and influence is a sign of Teja. Right? So attract. Right? Because we were saying that Teja is an Aniruddha. Aniruddha is in the position of Prayojana, or goal. Right, so Dira Prashanta. So he's able to attract. Means that you'll see that's what I want. Does that make sense? So it's not just you have power and influence, but the ability to attract. One who makes endless efforts in romance and is a charming, beautiful dresser is Lalita. Endless efforts, right? Because that's the element of romance. It's endless, right? Means we can say it from it's just thinking, just looking at it from the two sides, right? It's endless. it's endless. So the point is one who is willing to make an endless endeavor then is able to appreciate the endlessness of it. So if one wonders, you know, what happened? You know, where's the romance? That's because you didn't appreciate, you didn't make that endless effort for the endless. Right? That makes sense. Yes.
Can we say that Nitya Siddhas, they also have those qualities?
They'll have them to some degree, of course. Otherwise, how do they take part in it? But they have the feminine side of it, not the masculine. Means in past times here, they may manifest the masculine side of that. That's because that's just the role they're playing. Because there is no difference between the masculine and feminine. It's where it's manifest. You know what I'm saying? Means you have a T-shirt and you have a T-shirt. But one's masculine, one's feminine. You understand? So it takes on a whole different thing. The guy puts on a baggy T-shirt, he just looks dumpy. The girl puts on a baggy T-shirt, it's cute. You understand? So everything has its masculine and feminine qualities. Like that. So it's just dependent upon where it's manifest. So that's the whole point is bringing out is that the devotees also manifest, but Krishna it's unlimited, and a particular balance of it that's so unique. In other words, if every devotee is unique and attractive by manifesting a particular aspect of these, then how attractive is Krishna, who is the source of all these and has all these in perfect balance? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, persons who magnanimously give themselves to others is known as audarya. So magnanimity means that you're actually giving, not that you're just merciful, but you're actually giving that mercy. Does that make sense? So we can see is qualities means they're dynamic. We're not talking about qualities meaning they're just existing. It means when we talk about dynamic qualities not applied, that's what we talk about Brahman. So it's just the effulgence of that quality. In other words, the glory of the quality of magnanimity is the Brahman. But the application of magnanimously giving, that's the Abhideya. So that's the person. You understand? So Krishna is the person. So all the qualities, their qualities are from the effulgence of the personal. So that's why it's Saguna Brahman. Right? But it's not been specifically applied to an actual interaction. When it's applied to an interaction, it becomes personal. If it's generic, it's not personal. Though it's nice, we'll take it that if it's a nice quality, it's personal. If it's not a nice quality, it's impersonal. No, if it's not applied, it's impersonal. If it's applied, it's personal. So the guy is very jealous and envious and creating all kinds of problems for you. That's personal. It's not impersonal. Oh, you're being so impersonal, Prabhu. No, he's a person. He's in your, you know how you say it? He's getting up in your grill, right? So that means that's personal. Does that make sense? It's not impersonal. But we'll say, oh, why you're so impersonal? No, it's because your persons are dealing like that. Impersonal just means the generic. Beauty. Nature. Right? Organic. These are all impersonal.
Haranguing you on Facebook is impersonal.
Haranguing you on Facebook? No, that's personal. That's personal because they, as a person, are bothering you as a person. The medium is impersonal. You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulty. Because the medium, yes.
They didn't care about
you,
they wouldn't bother to
rush. Yeah, but they're either caring in the positive or in the negative, you know. But in other words, they care. You know, it's like the lady has divorced the man, right? And says doesn't want to have anything to do with him, won't talk to him, won't see him, they haven't interacted for years. But the point is then her and her friends, she has a circle of friends, right? She wants to have nothing to do with this guy. But can that circle of friends now, okay, he's available?
No.
No, because it's her guy to ignore. Not someone else's, you know, it's like that. So it's just, it's her interaction in the negative. That's why it says in the Shastra, you can never separate husband and wife. Because it'll either be in the positive, which is recommended, or in the negative. Like that. So it's you know.
Yeah. That can also be endless.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Krishna is thus the super excellent Nayaka. Although Krishna is supremely independent of everyone, out of his causeless mercy, he relies upon Garga Rishi for religious instruction. For learning military art, he takes instructions from Yuyudhana, Satyaki, and other Kshatriyas. For good counsel, he inquires from his friend Uddhava. He thus exhibits his versatility as a Nayaka. Because we have this idea, if I'm the head, I don't have to ask anybody about anything because somehow or another, just by getting the position, I suddenly know everything. You know, it's something like that. You know, you get married, you know unlimitedly everything about household life. You have a kid, you know everything about kids. That's all it takes. You just have to have the position. You're like that. You're in charge of something, you know everything. You don't have to ask anybody. Does that make sense? So, but we see Krishna's not like that. He's the super excellent. Not, therefore, he is able to function without. So, wherever someone's expert, therefore he interacts with them. Because if you don't, I'm the God. Who are you interacting with? Then you're just telling people what to do. You say, no, I'm interacting. But in telling people what to do is not interactive. You know what I'm saying? That's just part of the mechanics. But the personal interaction. Does that make sense? Rajanath, Prabhu, the specifics about Sri Krishna as the supreme Nayaka, embodying the entire spectrum of rasa, is very enlightening. Kindly tell us about these intimate devotees who are eligible to taste rasa and have thus attained the platform of Vibhava, wherefrom they appreciate the cause of transcendental love. But in other words, they have that relationship with Krishna Staibhav, that means so they're able to appreciate all these qualities of Krishna. That's, they love all these qualities. Right? Does that make sense? So this is Alambana. They are appreciating all the qualities of Krishna, which are the cause of all the rasa. It's not the interaction itself. It's what's going to cause. Vibhava means what causes it. So Alambana are the qualities, and then Udipan means the specifics of how it's applied. Right? Right. Then there's the interaction. Does that make sense?
Whereas this Udipan is all like.
we'll get into that, but you know.
Seeing the shoe of the child.
Yes, that's Udipan. But the point is that reminds you of the qualities, which is then, you know, the weathers. In other words, the alambana are the specific qualities, group of qualities, situation, everything that you are attracted to Krishna and like to serve Krishna through. Then the udipan will be that specific, which one is there right now that causes. Because it means there's a whole spectrum. But this one is manifest now. So that causes then the appreciation of that and then the interaction. So all this is showing is that, you know, in other words, what causes you to appreciate the quality. The quality you appreciate, and then what causes that particular, because there's so many of them. So why that one? Right? Does that make sense? You know, what was it? So Mother Yashoda sees the shoe, right? Then that reminds her of how Krishna walks. Not that he has a shoe, but whatever, using it. So how he walks, right? Because shoes means walking, right? And so then she'll remember the pleasing sweetness. Mm. Does that make sense? And then that takes it off into the other ecstasies, right? So that's where it'll start from. Then from that come all the other ecstasies of the, how you say, Sattvika Bhavas, Sanchari Bhavas, like that. Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Sattvika, yeah. Sanchari and Vyavak, they're the same. They're the same name. I mean, just, well, I mean, we'll see, maybe he gives reason why the two names. Okay. Okay, so now about the devotees. Goswami. Devotees whose inner nature is deeply steeped in Krishna consciousness ever taste rasa. The 29 of Krishna's qualities that begin with Satyavak, truthfulness, and continue to Huriman, modest and bashful, when glorified, as mentioned in the scriptures, are also present in his devotees. Right, so those 29 out of the 64 are also present in the devotees. So then that gives that'll be the basis. Because we see is that other qualities are coming from, or other combinations. Goswami. Oh, Vrajanath. What are the different classes of devotees eligible to cultivate rasa? Goswami. There are two kinds of rasopa yogi. Devotees eligible to taste rasa. The sadhaka and the siddha. Rasopa yogi. So when we practice yoga, we're doing the rasopa yoga. Okay. Vrajanath, who are the sadhakas? Goswami, a sadhaka is a devotee who has attained attraction for Sri Krishna, but is not yet completely freed of all anartas. He is engaged in qualifying himself to have the darshan of Sri Krishna by the cultivation of devotional in Krishna consciousness. The Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.46 describes the Madhyama Adhikari devotees belonging to the category of sadhaka. An intermediate or second class devotee called Madhyama Adhikari offers his love to the personality of Godhead, as a sincere friend to all the devotees of the Lord, shows mercy to ignorant persons who are innocent, and disregards those who are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, so then he's bringing out is that they're able to appreciate the rasa, right? Means it's in enough. Means in other words, we can sit and discuss it and appreciate it, but it's something like that is practical in their life that they're appreciating, right? But it's not on the stage of, what was the other? The siddha. Like that. Does that make sense? Because we have the aspect of ruchi and asakti, right? So that's already that preliminary aspect of this bhava is there. And, and also from that platform, then he's starting to appreciate the concept of rasa within the spiritual world, right? He doesn't know his rasa, means know the details of it, but he appreciates rasa. Yes.
Is there any connection between material and spiritual rasa in terms of whoever can appreciate the material can appreciate also spiritual, or vice versa?
The mechanics are the same. Does that make sense? Krishna says something witty, but it's taken as annoying. So then the gopis, you know, how they'll comments they'll make, tone of voice, how they'll turn, how they'll deal. Does that make sense? Right? Because in that rasa was the element of what was that? Okay. Witty, funny, joking, but then he gave further.
Very submissive.
That's there, but there was some other aspect. Okay, ever full of youthfulness, extremely confident of himself. So he does that. How do they respond? Right? Means they're just ignoring him, but is it done confidently or not confidently? Very confidently. Right? So to that degree of whatever was, they felt the foolishness of his joke is to that degree of confidence that they'll manifest. And so they'll use that youthfulness as the weapon. Does that make sense? So it's just, but that's very attractive. So it's just an opportunity to create attraction for Krishna, to create Krishna's enjoyment. You understand? So it's not about themselves. In other words, whatever he does, then what will increase his loving sentiments towards the devotee is what the devotees are doing, because he's the one tasting it. You understand? In other words, by him making a joke and the gopis getting upset, then that increases his love for them, because of what they do is very attractive. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, you heard the thing, yeah. The girl's saying all kinds of things like that, and the man's there, you're smiling. Why are you smiling? And he says, you look so nice when you're angry, you know, like that. And then she gets more angry, and so like this and that. You know, so the whole point is it's to increase the... So there is the element that enjoys this, but you actually have to be the Purusha to enjoy it, right? That's the difference, right? So, yeah, but in the material world, the girl's doing that because she's actually upset. She's not looking at it as an opportunity to increase the attraction of the boy to the girl. She's upset with the boy, so she's manifesting these qualities. But they're about herself. Now she's trying to pull his attention to her, but not out of, you know, it does have the underlying because of the mechanics of the love, but it has the thing of now she's punishing him that he shouldn't enjoy. You know what I'm saying? She was speaking nice and this and that, then he said something stupid that it was inappropriate, and now she's, you understand? So that element of getting insulted is not to increase the pleasure of the boy, it's to rectify things to increase her own pleasure. That's the perversion. That's the difference between the material and spiritual. Right? Because in the spiritual world, they do all those things to please Krishna. Here, it's being done to please ourselves. But the mechanics are exactly the same. But it's not that if you appreciate it here, you'll appreciate it there. Because if you appreciate it through hearing the science of it, you can appreciate it there. Otherwise, if you take it here, you'll just take that is what goes on here. You'll take it's mundane. You know, the guy is, he knows how to hang out with the girls, you know, he's a bit of a playboy, so he figures, you know, Krishna's a bit of a playboy, so he can relate. But it's nothing to do with that. Does that make sense? That's why it's said, because sometimes it's said, one of the upper sampradayas said, well, unless you're a grihastha, and are engaged in conjugal rasa, you can't actually appreciate the conjugal rasa of the spiritual world. So that's why, you know, being brahmacharis, and that's not going to actually cut it. Right? But the acharyas make a very strong stand on that. It has nothing to do with that. Right? It's just because one tastes here. It's the mechanics, because you're not tasting the mechanics. You're tasting the effect of the mechanics. You don't actually know the mechanics. You just know that, well, you know, if I dress like this or walk like this or talk like this, and the ladies are impressed. But you don't know why they're impressed. But here, this explains why they're impressed. Because it gives an opportunity for rasa, for interaction. Right? The female being dependent. So the point of Krishna here is being dependent, you know, is that it's all auspicious. Right, being the emblem of trustworthiness and dependability for the entire universe makes Krishna all auspicious, Mangalya. So the girl is thinking that the mechanics of dependency means it'll be create auspiciousness, because that's what it does in the spiritual world. But because it's self-centered here, she's doing it for herself, dealing with the dependability of the man for her own purpose. But the man is being dependable for his own purpose. So therefore, the mechanics look the same, but the taste that you're getting is not. It's opposite. Does that make sense? So that's why I was saying is that the culture of the spiritual world is what we're talking about here. If you say that, no, there's a culture here and then there's a different one there, the mechanics, that's impersonal. That's actually the Mayavad concept, that the material is one thing and the spiritual is another. The mechanics are the same. It's a reflection. The arm in the mirror, as you move your arm up and down, in reality, it moves up and down in exactly the same mechanical fashion. The difference is you can't get anything from that. Well, from the real arm, you can. From the real movement, you can. It's not that anything's accomplished by the arm moving up and down in the mirror. That makes sense? That's the problem. If you think the man in the mirror is who you should be listening to, you got a problem. Right? Okay, who are the sadhakas? Okay, so then the Madhyama. Vrajanath, Gurudev, are the neophyte devotees described in verse 11-247 of the Srimad Bhagavatam qualified for tasting rasa? So here also you see the qualifications of those involved. When they quote a shloka, they also know that shloka and all the other shlokas. Right? Okay, this is the verse. A devotee who faithfully engages in the worship of the deity in the temple, but does not behave properly towards other devotees or people in general, is called a prakriti bhakta, a materialistic devotee, and is considered to be in the lowest position. Right? So the point is, he has that faith in the Lord. Right? That's what makes him a devotee. But he doesn't deal with devotees nicely. Right? Does that make sense? So if sometimes he does and sometimes he doesn't, then that means he's in a better position. But when he always deals nicely, that means that's the predominance that brings to the Madhyama platform. Right? Yes?
What about if he deals in an impersonal way with the devotees?
It's the same. It's just, you know, it means he may be doing everything proper and right and proper etiquette, but it doesn't have, then it won't have the same thing, because the point is it's the Lord and the devotees that makes rasa. So the devotee is so important. So saying that the Lord is the only one important means you've actually missed the point, because rasa means the Lord and the devotee. Right? Like that. Goswami. If they can progress to the stage of Shuddha Bhakti by the mercy of a pure devotee and become sadhakas, they may become qualified to taste rasa. Otherwise, they cannot. So here they mention as sadhakas. Remember, because you're talking bhakti abhas. Means a bhakta means a sadhaka, sadhana bhakta means he's performing sadhana. So a bhakti abhas means one who is imitating or almost like a devotee performing sadhana. Does that make sense? So, in other words, he's performing the sadhana, but he's not performing it in the mood of pure devotion. Does that make sense? Now, this process becomes a lot easier if we understand that pure devotion starts from the Madhyama platform. If we take that Shuddha Bhakti starts at prema, then we'll become discouraged because we'll say, well, I'm not performing pure devotion, so therefore, I'm so far from being a devotee. No, the point is it starts at the Madhyama platform. That's what makes the Madhyama devotee. He appreciates that the devotees are performing pure devotional service. The neophyte is, no, the Nityasiddha, this, that, fell out of the heavenly planets or wherever he falls out of. That then he's something to be respected, and everybody else is a schmutz. Right?
So can we call a Madhyama a pure devotee?
Yes, he is a pure devotee. But he is within pure devotees, he's the neophyte pure devotee. Right? Because a neophyte devotee, as we mentioned it, the Kanista, he's actually the shadow of a devotee. He's doing the activities, but he doesn't quite have the mood. Just like when you move, your shadow moves. It does all the same movements, but it doesn't have the substance. So that's what neophyte means, is that you're practicing. So that's why it says if they can progress to the stage of Shuddha Bhakti by the mercy of a pure devotee. Right? So that means in the association of devotees, that's when it gets serious. So if they take that up nicely and deal nicely, then they'll progress. Right? Then they'll come to that platform. Because that's the actual platform, you could say, of sadhana bhakti, your actual sadhaka at that stage. But you're a preliminary, just like, let's say, somebody joins something, a club or things like that. So they're on trial, you know, there's certain things they have to learn, they have to go through some process before they become a full member, right? But before that, they're an associate member or this or that, whatever kind of titles they give. So, but they're still counted as part of the club. So the neophyte is counted as part of the devotional club. But they're not a full member till they become a Madhyama. Because then it becomes serious. Does that make sense?
So what about, we used to say, if I'm a preacher, I'm a Madhyama because I'm giving mercy.
Yeah, so when you're preaching, you are a Madhyama. It's just a matter of when you're not preaching, now it's a question of whether you're still a Madhyama or not. Right? Because when a neophyte preaches, he's acting on the Madhyama platform. And so long as he's doing that not for himself, but for, you know, to please Guru Krishna and the Vaishnavas, he's acting as a Madhyama. Just like the Uttama comes down and acts as a Madhyama. But his realization is that of an Uttama. So here, the neophyte, he acts as a Madhyama. Though his realization is that of a neophyte. Right? So that's why you have the classifications there, not of whether he's preaching or that, because that's what everybody does. The Madhyama position is the one that everybody takes, but on how well he knows the Shastras or whether he can be distracted from his faith. Right? Means the Uttama acting as the Madhyama, you can never defeat him in argument. The Madhyama is a Madhyama, then generally you can't, but occasionally you might stump him. He doesn't know what to say. But the neophyte then doesn't necessarily have so much. He knows a little bit, can deal a little bit, but doesn't have much more. And then you also have the weakness that the Uttama and the Madhyama, even if they don't, it means the Uttama always has an answer. The Madhyama may not have an answer, but it won't bother his faith, just that he doesn't have an answer. But the neophyte might get his faith disturbed. So that's how it's looked at. So if someone is preaching, he's on the Madhyama platform. Now we're trying to get the realization up to the Madhyama platform also. So that doesn't mean while he's doing, he's not acting. Just like sitting in the kirtan, one may be fully absorbed in the name, you're chanting Shuddhanam. But it may be after the kirtan, then your chanting may not be Shuddhanam because you're distracted by so many other things.
So if one's on the, it sounds like what you're saying, one's actually on the Madhya platform, then he can take disciples. Because he's a pure devotee.
Yeah, he's a neophyte can, but the problem is until as he advances, they can advance, generally. Though you do have example of Dhruvamara. His mother was a neophyte, but he advanced, you know, to the Uttam platform. So it is possible. Just the thing is generally speaking, you take on that mood, so it's in the general category, you won't. But if you take, in other words, if the instruction is bona fide, you take it and apply it, you get the benefit for how well you've applied it. But generally speaking, you take on the kind of like the whole persona of those you associate with. So if you people you're around, you're really dynamic, you're more dynamic, and if they're not, you're more like that. So that's why the general rule is you shouldn't take initiation from a neophyte, because you know if you're manifesting so much of neophyte qualities, then it will be slow. So Madhyama is okay. That's dynamic, because they're a pure devotee. That's what I said, you should initiate from a pure devotee. But we'll take that meaning in Nitya Siddha, right? Like that. Does that make sense? At least Prabhupada disciples will. If they're not Prabhupada disciples, they don't necessarily do that, because it's not that Prabhupada's their Siksha Guru, not their Diksha Guru. And so then they'll look at it, okay, he's the supreme, and then, you know, they'll be able to make adjustments there. You know, cause,
so that statement in Nectar of Instruction only take from a Uttama.
Yeah, but that's the best. But the point is that's why in this age, then the that's discussion coming up at 8:30 is that you have a founder acharya. See, in the other ages, you don't require the founder acharya. You don't have them in the other ages because there, as Buddha the disciple, it always works very nicely. But in the Kali Yuga, then you'll have many people taking advantage of the process. But the problem is the bewilderment of what instructions, what's important, how to balance what would be the application type place of circumstance. So therefore, the Lord sends the Acharya to establish what is the teachings, what is the practice, what is the forms and everything that are used. So everybody just simply has to follow that. So as long as one is speaking that's what Prabhupada calls relevant instruction. So that means you're Madhyama. So the Uttama has established the system. And then, therefore, the Madhyamas can carry it on. Even the neophytes can carry it on. Like we give example. Most devotees are made devotees by a neophyte devotee, and many times someone who's even uninitiated. It's because the potency is there. It's just not regular. When they're out there and on the street, they talk, they made you a devotee. But you meet them the next day, they may be totally mental. You know, it's like that. So there's not the steadiness that you'll find in the Madhyama. So the Madhyama he preached to you today, tomorrow he'll still be able to preach to you. So that's why the Madhyama is considered better. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. So therefore you have the Acharya, that's the Adi Guru that's mentioned. And then the preachers, they're giving relevant instruction, means how to follow and apply the instruction of the Uttamadhikari into your life. That's what the mission is for. That's why it has a founder. And you look, it's not that there's other missions that don't have, you know, the Shri's, there's Ramanuja, you know. Does that make sense? So the you know, mud like this, so that's what you have. Even the Mayavads, they still have to have a founder. Like that. That's just how it works in this age. So Prabhupada is the founder for ISKCON. So when we say founder Acharya, it doesn't just mean the guy who went down and registered it. You know, like the guy who goes down and registers a thing for cows. So he's the founder. It's like, you know, give me a break. Founder has some spiritual significance. And any devotees who use it on their own name, they really don't know what they're doing. It's a special position. The founder Acharya is not just, you know, okay, he started it. No, founder Acharya is the one who all their instructions. That means for 10,000 years, he's the founder Acharya. There'll be other great personalities that come up, just like in the Madhva line. Then they have other personalities that came up and you know, rally everybody and get everybody, to get everyone to follow Madhva's instructions. So you'll find that. So they'll rally everyone to follow Prabhupada's instructions. But you'll never get anyone replace Prabhupada. That just doesn't happen. The founder is never replaced. It just doesn't work like that. So he has a time for his mission. Right? And so Prabhupada's is for 10,000 years. So his books are going to be used for 10,000 years. But it said there'll be purports written to his purports. You know? So what that means is bringing out the details of what's there, or that you have to actually translate it into whatever the colloquial 25, you know, vocabulary, you know, English that's going on at the time. You know. Is that okay? So that's what's special. So therefore, the Madhyamas can make the system go very well. But it's based on the Uttab's instructions. So that's why there must be Siksha Gurus. Right? Because if any one of them does have problem, you have all the others to depend upon. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So the neophytes decide, it's chaste if I only have one person, I get rid of all the others. And then when something happens to them, then they have no one. Then the problem is our Sampradaya has a problem? No, it's the neophytes that have a problem. They always create these things. You know, when you say pure devotee, it has to be a nityasiddha. You know, they're the ones that create all the problem. Right? But the point is that's what the mission is for, is uplifting them. Right, so that's why the mission is there. That's why there must be the cooperation. Right. Then it works very nicely. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Sabha Veta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Janya Dai Gaura Prevanati.